We begin again. Welcome, listeners, to the next installment of Back at the Start. This is an auditory experience designed to be a discussion between fans of the tabletop library series Co-op 1991. I am Techie Kara. I will be one of the hosts of the wheel today, guiding you through as we recap Season 2, Episode 1 of Co-op 1991, which has the name Breadcrumb Trail, followed by a conversation highlighting the moments that stuck out to us, what we think these moments might be leading to, how this episode rumours may influence the future of the show, and finally, the thoughts of you, our audience. As listeners, you matter. You can interact with this podcast through our Twitter account at CoopPod, or by emailing us your thoughts to backatthestartpod@gmail.com. We will also be providing details for a giveaway later in the episode. Stay tuned for more information. Now, before we begin, do any of my hosts have any questions?
Nope.
Nope.
Roll the intro.
You found yourself back at the start.
Okay, and that's enough of that. As I said, this is Take Care, and I'd like to welcome you back to our little podcast. And quickly, before the others jump in to introduce themselves and get the show on the road, a huge thank you to everyone who has listened to our first episode so far, and to the people subscribing on Podbean, Spotify, Apple, and more. This has already surpassed anything we were imagining, and we can't wait to bring you more. So, without further ado, I'm going to let the others introduce themselves, and then we're going to jump straight in with a recap of the episode that we're talking about, which, as I mentioned before, is The Breadcrumb Trail, start of Season 2, Episode 1.
Hello again, passengers. It's GSEA on all the socials again here.
Hello, I'm Logan. You can find me as Logan Pars pretty much everywhere.
Hello, everyone. My name is Zen State. I am Zen State on pretty much every social.
Okay, and as I said, we're going to be jumping straight in with a recap, which I believe Logan is taking the floor for.
The first episode started off with a really wild ride, because we start off with something new. We start off with a bunch of people cutting into some flesh, almost like mad scientists, like a scene out of Breaking Bad, where they're taking bones, grinding it down, turning into some type of drug. And then we switch to the Co-op radar. Basically, we recap. We get reintroduced to all the characters. We see Mallory, who's in a very bad state. We see Billy, who also is not in a very good state. We see Mickey dealing with her new family situation, and get to see Em and Laura really for the first time. They all convene at the beach where Billy now works. And that's when things really go crazy and go off the rails. And don't want to go too much into that because we'll get into the discussion, but it gets very strange and Mickey disappears. That's pretty much a recap of the show if you want to talk about the particular points of it.
Now, there was an important character name introduced into this one, which we'll go into more detail about in episode 2, which is, I think it's Aaron Setter is the name. And that seems to be someone who will be important in the future.
Definitely. Aaron's part of the town council. He was one of the community chairs. So yeah, he's probably going to be a big thing.
I mean, I guess we're going into the discussion, like the very first thing, that if we start from the start, then talking about the tiers process is certainly interesting thing to come up with at first.
Well, it obviously seems connected to the pounds of flesh, but we have to wonder if it's like new pounds of flesh or if it's connected to Clarence, where that comes from.
That's what I was going to say. And if it comes from Clarence, is he involved with this whole drug process? Is the Traveler involved? Just leaves me with more questions.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about that scene. It's going to be really interesting to see if we see more of that process and what more information we get from it.
And what is up with Mallory trying to soothe himself with everything he's trying to do? Mallory has gone through so much, everything that's gone on with his dad and with everything. We started with in the scene with Tibby, and Tibby, as we all know from last season, Tibby heals everybody, and Mallory taking advantage of that. While he ended up spoiler alert, putting his hand in his garbage disposal, if I remember correctly. And he, for whatever reason, he wanted to damage himself. What is up with Mallory?
I also wanted to talk about what Billy was doing, where he was apparently writing things on his chest, which also seemed to be a palindrome, which is very common in Kolak, and what that means. He wrote Boro, and we're not sure what that connects to yet.
I mean, when I can't remember who it was. I think it may have been Jay Pistol that was first posting it in the chat, but yeah, actually, the full thing, it's Boro and then Boro backwards, but if it's all one word, it can separate to Boro or Rob. And I'm wondering whether that might be something related to the, for people who haven't watched anything outside of Co-op 1991, the series directly preceding it, the Kids on Bike Playtest, Lucas played a character called Lucas, who is very much related to the character of Billy, in that his ego was transplanted into Billy. But Billy doesn't seem to remember any of that, or at least that's what we've been led to believe up until this point. And I'm wondering whether it may be part of Lucas starting to emerge in Billy's psyche and starting to try and gain dominance in some way, or trying to influence things in some way.
Yeah, I could see that being his ego trying to come out a bit more. That would make sense. This was a very dark episode, but one thing that I did like that was a bit lighter was the naming of MPEG's family, which we got to meet, and the fact that her parents are working with her to help her not overuse her power.
I love that. The way that Jay is trying to teach her how to resolve situations without using her powers by putting it within the D&D game that they play together, that was very cute.
Yeah, I really liked that they brought that into, because really, playing RPGs can very much be like that. They can be therapeutic, they can be helpful in that way. Now, the other thing I'm curious about that happened at the beach during the beach scene, when everybody was having interesting hallucinations, was apparently a police officer was killed somewhere along the way, but I don't think that happened on screen, and I don't think we have a lot of details about that yet, but it seems to hold Tibby responsible. So I'm very curious what's going to come out of that.
Yeah, I get the impression from what had been said there is that effectively when the police had tried to restrain Tibby after Mallory had restrained him, that in the process of trying to get him restrained, that he ended up attacking one of the police, thinking that the police officer was dead, and so killed him in the process.
Right, that makes sense, yeah, because Tibby's power was reversing for that episode, which is also what happened to poor Mike Hunt. Something I did miss during the live episode, but saw in the notes later, is the fact that there was a lot of people were seeing red string, but there was, I think it was Tibby or Mallory was seeing it as white.
Mallory saw it as white. As soon as he got done with the conversation with his father, he saw like white wisps heading towards the lake.
Right. So we have to wonder if that's somehow connected to Harmonia, perhaps, seeming to be a positive influence as opposed to Phobos as a more dark influence.
Yeah, and I kind of have to take a step back when you're talking about that, because there was the whole incident with his Xbox Val, where everything got strange on the screen. And it had me wondering, because Mallory was talking about how his power was charisma, that he was so charming. And then C seemed to be under some sort of spell. So that was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was. I'd really like to know what was up with that. I like how in Kolak, both the music and the visuals are good cues for shifts like that.
One of the things I was thinking with regard to the red string is, while Mallory saw it as white and MPEG and Laura saw it as red, were anybody else that were in the lake that were actually affected, did they actually see a red string, or were they just in the moment and being impacted by what was going on in the lake? That's something I was curious about, is was it just those that weren't influenced by whatever was going on at the lake?
Yeah, and I'm wondering too, was it only perhaps people with powers who saw the string, or was it everybody? And I wonder if we'll ever find that out. That would be very interesting to know about.
Yeah, because as far as we're aware, like from the general description that I, from my understanding, is that anyone that was in the water saw the illusions in some way or touched the water supply during the day, because we had obviously Billy had drunk from the water, but then most of the people who were having hallucinations were the ones that had been in the water itself. But we didn't get a definitive description, as far as I can recall, to know that the people who weren't powered or weren't part of the group were seeing red string. They were at the very least seeing hallucinations, and presumably if it's the same as what the others saw, they saw their worst fears.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the other part that's going to come interestingly in the future out of the beach scene is this whole narrative that's going on now with Mallory being the hero and pulling everyone out, and the fact that he's also running, one of the people who's running for mayor.
Yeah, I think the fact that it didn't affect Mallory in the same way, instead of his worst fears, it was kind of like it was obviously seeing his father, but also the fact that it kind of almost compelled him to be courageous. Like, it almost like he was completely ignoring fear at that point. So it was kind of a complete opposite, which again could lead to the possibility that it is something to do with the fact that it may be Harmonia based and it was the opposite of the energy of Phobos for some reason is attached to him.
Now, one other thing about I wanted to mention about this episode, for anybody who maybe is just jumping in for season two, is there was a bit of a technical visual shift. They redid the set for season two, so there's a whole different background, including a television set that seems to have regular related messages pop up on it as the show goes on.
That was something I found interesting, is with the television set, looking behind it, it constantly focused on Billy, and it focused on Billy floating in the water. And what was the message behind that? I'm kind of curious on anybody's thoughts on that.
Yeah, that was interesting. And it was definitely the messages in this one were very Billy focused. It was like Billy and Y and crocodiles and other rotating images through. Still, I want to go rewatch that and see if I can pick up any more clues from it.
I think for me, that again, if I'm correct in the idea that it is in some way that the scene earlier with Lucas about the Bora Rob is part of Lucas's psyche coming in on Billy, then it may be a case of those messages are kind of a way to illustrate Lucas's subconscious as it's trying to push itself onto Billy and trying to, because whereas Billy wasn't initially conscious of the impact of his powers, obviously through the actions of what's happened, Lucas would likely be aware. And given the fact that Lucas is from another universe and that the danger that one of the universes that could eventually be erased through the use of Billy's powers is the universe that Lucas came from, it may be a case of like it's all part of like his guilt coming in, Billy's guilt manifesting as Lucas starting to become more active within his mind.
Yeah, that could very well be. Another thing that happened this episode that we should probably talk about is Mickey A and B.
Well, they met in this episode, and it was interesting to see how different Zach was able to play the Mickey A as opposed to obviously Shelby playing Mickey B, and like even just in the way that she was addressing things, both to I can't remember the name of the guy who had them, but to him and to Shelby. It was interesting to see how he was trying to make it clear how much she had been through, literally just from the way she was speaking to both of them. Yeah, Bob Whitney. it was interesting to see how their interaction was, and also to see how Bob was reacting to their conversation and to effectively like seeing how they would react to each other and then trying to use that to his advantage to try and get more of the information that he needed.
Yeah, Bob Whitney really has me confused. Because there was that rumor from last season about an international team. So I was wondering if he's part of that. And I wonder where in the world he got those cages from, because those are not normal cages. So who supplied those? Who made those?
That's a very good question. Does anybody have any theories about why the two Mickeys are together, or what it means, or what's going to happen with it?
Well, at the end of the finale episode of last season, we saw the primate versions of Tibby, Marcus, and Mickey, who were with JA, as they were at the mirror, which we know from parts of the primate timeline, was used to transfer egos into primate in order to negotiate a change in the contract for Mammon. And it looked like they were trying to use the mirror in some way to transport somewhere else. So presumably, from that, we now have the fact that the Mickey from Prime A is in Prime B, and that she has come here saying that her Tibby is dead and that she needs the Tibby from Prime B for some reason. Although, well, we say for some reason. She did say at one point, "You don't realize that we're dying." And I think, while I don't think necessarily it was picked up on, I think she means specifically that the Mickeys are dying due to use of their power.
Yeah, that would make sense. I wonder if she was the only one who came through, and if not, what the other ones might be doing, or if they might come through later or affect the story later.
Well, she did say that Tibby's dead, so no clue what happened to the others.
Well, and which Tibby was that? Was that Tibby Prime A or Tibby Prime B?
Should be Tibby Prime A that died, because Tibby Prime A lost an arm, and I got the sense that it wasn't coming back, or else he would have healed it already.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yep.
So that's a good roundup of like the general bits of discussion that we've been thinking of and a couple of our thoughts going through. But specifically, do you feel that from anything that has cropped up in this last episode, have you got any theories going ahead, or things that you've seen touched upon that you want to see expanded in next episode or future episodes?
I'm very curious to know more about that stuff that happened at the beginning with the tears drug, and what they're doing with that, and if it's just within Kolok, or if we find out that it may be connected to other things.
I'm very curious about the red strings, because that seems like an obvious reference to this, and I want to see if it really is.
That would be fun. This, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know, is the Hopeful Investigation Squad, which is a bunch of us really big Ten Candles fans that got together and started discussing theories while that was on.
Yeah, and I think, like, especially starting to see elements of Ten Candles possibly starting to come in more with the red string specifically on this episode. It's quite interesting because obviously for people who have watched more of the Phobos saga, like seeing, obviously we know that there are characters that appear in both series. We know that there are elements that are connected. Like, we've seen that there are like symbols that are involved and things like that, which obviously were part of a few of the major volumes of Ten Candles. And starting to see those elements coming back in and see and wanting to know where they're going to carry on appearing and moving on to. It's very interesting to me because obviously, given that it has been like over a year now since those stories, but seeing them crop back up in different ways is quite an interesting like part of the show for me.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of symbolism, so I'm quite curious because Zach has specifically stated that the symbols do not mean the same things, the ones that are the same visually, do not mean the same thing that they did in Ten Candles. So I'm very curious to see how that's going to process.
What I'm really interested in seeing is now that we know, well, obviously there are multiple universes, if we end up having Mickey A and Mickey B, are they going to end up showing up in the same universe? And how is that going to handle that? I'm just curious if we have that with all the other characters, not just Mickey, if that's going to be something that's going to kind of mess with the timeline and mess with the world that we're in currently.
For sure. That's going to be interesting to see if we get multiples of others.
So that was, I think that with the theories, like it's very interesting to see what we think might happen with those. But then we also have the rumors, which are very influential, as we know, future episodes. And there was some very strange ones for this episode. We had that Kolok gets a cult, that Kolok gets a sheriff, that Kolok gets a circus, or Kolok gets an arsonist.
And I think at the end of the night, it ended up being two of them tied, right? Which was cult and a new sheriff.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see how those are going to tie in. It's going to be, given Zach, it could be anything with either one of those. I mean, sheriff-wise, if the Ten Candles elements continue, I'd love to see the bull come back in. For anyone who doesn't know, the bull is a character in the Volume 2 of Ten Candles, which was the town of Kolob, where the town sheriff was a man who had a supernatural ability to turn into a bull-like minotaur creature called Sheriff Asim. And during that volume, he very much came to be an antagonist for the group towards the end of the volume.
And we did see a similar, but not obviously not the same character, when in season one, when they were jumping universes, they came across a similar type character. We don't know how close it was to the original concept of the bull, but it was obviously some sort of police officer with supernatural powers again.
Well, I believe on his badge it actually said Asim. So yeah, that would have been, you know, something similar to the original sheriff from Kolob.
So pretty connected then, probably. I was kind of hoping that Circus would win because I think that Zach would have a lot of fun doing a weird, creepy circus. But maybe that will come back at some point.
I mean, again, given previous connections, there was a circus in the Kids on Bikes playtest, which could have connected to that if Zach had wanted to.
Arsonist one was interesting. Wasn't there a rumor before about Mallory and Burke setting fire to the Taco Bell Express?
Yeah, that was one of the rumors that came up at one point. And as far as I know, we haven't heard about any other fire-related things that weren't connected to someone's powers.
Right. We haven't heard from Burke for quite some time.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of characters that could pop up in interesting ways.
And in regards to an arsonist, well, we already know one character that could easily fit into that grouping, and we don't know what's been happening to her since March.
That's true. We don't even know if she's still in town.
Indeed.
So, we're close to wrapping up here, but we do want to give some time to discussing the thoughts of you who have messaged us on Twitter and told us what you're thinking about how the show is going so far and what is happening. So, the first one that I have here is from Daniel Gonzalez, who is Royal Tsunami on Twitter. I'm really liking how season 2 is focused more on the town. I think it gives the viewers a chance to see the player characters from a new perspective. Embeth is such a great example of this. Seeing how Siren Mika has played her differently in season 1 and 2 is amazing.
Yeah, that's a really good comment. She really has, the character growth is very obvious in how she's playing the character between season 1 and season 2.
And piggybacking off of that, there's a second tweet who I'm not sure who this is from. Their name is Siren Mika, and their name is Mika Midget. And she just stated that Embeth is really great, isn't she? I mean, I think that Beth is a great character, and I'm sure everyone else agrees. I'm not exactly sure why this particular person is asking.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
But to finish up on the Twitter post that we're covering for this episode, we had another one from Chovixani, who's Chovixani R on Twitter, asking us our opinions on Laura and why we love her.
I think she's really great. She's very strong. She's not afraid to step in. She's been a lot of fun to see the differences between Laura and Marcus and what Laura's been through and how that's affecting her character.
I absolutely love Laura just because she's, like Gaia said, she's so much different than Marcus, and she's just this strong female character that that can actually help this group that's actually moving forward in season two.
And it's interesting that in season two, we have, as far as we know at the moment, two characters that don't have powers, which is going to be quite different.
Yeah, I'm interested to see whether they're going to go down the line of eventually them getting powers, or whether they do still want to keep them as powerless for now, and whether that becomes more of the powered characters being more protective of the non-powered characters, and that influencing the way that they change, like the actions that they may have done in the past.
One thing I'm kind of wondering, too, is the fact that Laura's from the other universe. Is that her power?
That's a good point. It could be, and it could be just something that's not revealed yet.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we know from, again, speaking about Billy, that powers are transferred with the ego of an individual, not the body. And we know that from Mickey as well, obviously, from when she was transporting between bodies and between universes. So it could be that Laura does have an ability of some kind, but just hasn't revealed itself in some way yet, or it may be a case that she doesn't even remember having it.
Yeah, because we know that Billy doesn't remember being, well, most of what happened from the other universe. So it could be, you got to wonder how much of her is still in there from that other universe.
As I mentioned before, like we're really happy to be hearing from people interacting with the show, and we would love to hear from more of you. And as part of that, as I mentioned at the start of the show, we have a bit of a giveaway that we've decided to do amongst the group. So, as you may or may not know, Alex Neat, who is the composer of the music for Colour 1991, has just started to release the first few tracks of the soundtrack onto his Bandcamp. And we are going to be giving away free copies of the album as it has been released at the moment, which is three tracks, which are the song for Orchestra and Electricity, which you most likely recognize as one of the major themes that is used when things are starting to go wrong for the radar. Before the Black Sun of Melancholy, which is a very light and mellow piece, which is used for a lot of the somber moments during the show. And then a third track, which is actually the title sequence music for the Ten Candles, which is known as The Hive. So, as I said, we're going to be giving away free copies of this album, which, if you wish to purchase it yourself, is available on Alex's Bandcamp, which is alexneat.bandcamp.com. Now, in order to enter the giveaway, rather than helping us, because, of course, we would love your comments and your ratings, and please, if you are specifically on Apple Podcasts, but any podcast system where you are able to rate us and comment, it would be great to have your support, but we also would love to see some support go towards the official Colour podcast. So, if you're not following it already, we'd like you to go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to Colour 1991, Kids on Bikes TTRPG, and then give it a rating and make a comment there. Put on the review why you like Coloc, what your favorite moment, what your favorite character has been so far. And then if you can either tweet at us or email us at backatthestartpod@gmail.com telling us the name that you used to comment. Obviously, if you would prefer not to put that on social media, then as I said, you are more than welcome to email us at that address. And then what we're going to do is at the end of the episode covering the third episode of this season, so not next week's episode, but the week after, we will read out the free names of the people who have won the giveaway, and we will contact you in order to buy the album for you. So this is just a way of us wanting to give back to Hyper RPG and to help them get more reviews and likes on their podcast, but it's a way for you to interact with us as well. And as I said, we would love to hear more from you interacting with us via our Twitter, our email address. So please feel free to reach out, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Just before we go, I wanted to mention and thank everyone who has signed up for the role-playing on the Hyper Discord. Our town census is now over 200 people, which is really wonderful. If you want to get in on that, please feel free to jump in. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, all it costs is a subscription to Hyper on Twitch, or and also a pledge to Hyper's Patreon. In both instances, as long as it's $5 or over, or if you have Amazon Prime and you have a free Prime sub, you can use that to sub to Hyper RPG on Twitch as well. And then just join the Discord, which is discord.gg/hyperRPG. And then link up your accounts, and you can make a character and interact with the town, and even have the possibility of the characters in world running into you, or even going so far as your character being embodied by someone in the show.
In fact, MPEG started out as a chat NPC.
Okay, and I think with that, we have come to the end of this episode. We are hoping to be continuing on in a more regular basis. Hopefully we will be doing this weekly. We're not 100% sure about our schedule just yet, but we will let you all know as we are going forward. I've been Techie Kara.
I've been Gaia CA.
I've been Logan.
And I'm Zen_State.
And we will see you next time for Back at the Start. Thank you for listening to Back at the Start, a fan discussion podcast for the tabletop live play show Co-op 1991 on Hyper RPG. Your hosts for today were Gaia CA, Logan Pars, Techie Kara, and Zen State. This podcast was edited by Techie Kara and recorded on the 4th of September 2019. Special thanks to Ray Wise for the introduction and outro soundbite, and Zach Lim Eubank for giving permission for us to use it. Co-op 1991 is streamed live every Monday at 6 PM Pacific Time on twitch.tv/hyperRPG and is available on demand via Twitch and YouTube. It is also available in podcast form. Just search for Co-op 1991 on your favourite podcasting platform. You can follow us at Co-op Pod on Twitter for updates and to interact with the show. You can also email us at backatthestartpod@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening, and
you found yourself back at the start.